Welcome to Smash to Pieces, a casual walk through the history of the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate roster. My name is Joe.
And my name is Matt.
And if you're new here, what we are doing on this show is we are playing one game for every character in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, from 1984's Duck Hunt to 2017's The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And today's episode is the finale of our discussion on the game representing fighter number 61, the 1997 PlayStation game, Final Fantasy VII.
The long journey is over.
We made it. Over half of this year was spent playing JRPGs. Two JRPGs specifically for this show.
Yeah, they're long games.
Yeah, just this and Earthbound took up over half the year. That's really funny to me, and I don't know why. But yeah, we did it. We finished it. We beat Sephiroth.
Well, sort of. But Sephiroth's not really in this game.
I fought Sephiroth. I killed him.
You fought Genova.
I killed Sephiroth. I hit him with a big, big attack. Swung my sword lots of times, and Sephiroth died.
I really like that overall plot twist where Sephiroth has actually been dead the entire game. And Genova is the actual villain of the game.
Yeah, but I like swung my sword at Sephiroth a bunch of times and did like 30,000 damage, probably more
you
than
sure
that.
Did,
and,
bud.
And he died.
You sure did.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
I sent him to Kingdom Hearts. So this episode, as you might have guessed, is going to cover the jump back into Midgar all the way to the end of the game.
Really, I think we're just talking about the game as a whole, because not a lot happens in Midgar.
Yeah, you go and you fight, like, that big robot thing, and then you kill Hojo. Hojo dies. That was interesting.
And that's it. That's Midgar.
That's Midgar. And then you, go to the North Cavern to fight dear old Speppy Roth.
And then you do.
And that's the game. So, yeah, I guess this is mostly going to be just general talk about the game, because now we've got the full picture, basically, and we can just finish it up. So overall, what did you think about Final Fantasy VII? I think that's where we should start, is just our general feelings. How do you now feel about Final Fantasy VII?
It was pretty good. I am excited to want to play Remake more than I am excited about having played 7. I kind of don't like the combat in 7. The active time battle system is cool and all, but every battle I could pretty much win by just spamming the same attacks over and over. It never really felt like there was a lot of consequence to the combat, and I also don't really like how open-ended materia is. I don't like that all the characters are really just blank slates that you can do whatever with, because it makes it feel like none of the characters have their own real identity in gameplay. But that being said, I really liked the story. I liked it more than I expected to. I think that there's a lot of it that still holds up pretty well, even though the pacing's kind of bad. And I think that it's really easy to see how this game was so revolutionary as far as like just technology and graphics at the time, because it's really unlike anything that ever existed before it. They blend the pre-rendered backgrounds into cinematic FMVs so well, and it's I would imagine that on a CRT in standard definition resolution, it's seamless. So it's really easy to see why this game was so revolutionary, and I liked it more than I kind of expected to, because I kind of expected it to just be like, well, yeah, this was pretty big back in the day, but it doesn't necessarily hold up. And I think it holds up pretty well, even if it doesn't hold up perfectly.
That's roughly where I'm at too. I kind of went in this expecting to either think it was, I mean, it's all right, or like not like it at all, because me and Square Enix style design circa 97 and before, probably circa 2000 and before, honestly. Actually, I've now discovered circa 2001 and before, probably more than that even. We don't get along. But I really, really enjoyed my time with Final Fantasy VII, and I think a big part of it is all of the quality of life additions to the, like, modern port. I think without times 3 speed, I would have had a much less good time. And, like, the power-up cheat, I could take it or leave it. We beat Earthbound without power-up cheats. Whatever, it's fine. It got us through it faster, and I thank it for that.
I don't think the power-up cheat was, like, necessary for the port to be successful.
Yeah, as much as I like it, I don't think it needed to be there necessarily, but I think times 3 speed, 100% thank God they put that in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And overall, I like most of the cast, except for, well, I like some of the cast. I like Barret. I like Tifa. Aerith is fine, I guess, but then, and Red 13 I really like, because he got that really cool story moment that really turned me around on him. And then past that, I mean, I don't care about Cid. I don't care about Vincent or Yuffie, and granted, Vincent and Yuffie are optional. I think Yuffie was the funnier of the two optional party members, because Vincent just sort of said a line every once in a while, but that's it. But Yuffie would actually, like, do things and have gags and steal my materia and make me go through her stupid village. Cait Sith exists. He sure does.
Don't you mean Ketshi?
No.
So that's the thing we learned in the last couple days, that Ketshi is an actual thing from Celtic mythology.
Yeah, and that's how they pronounce it. And you said Dirge of Cerberus? Because you went looking into, like, a bunch of shit in preparation for this episode.
So here's the thing. They don't pronounce it. I looked really hard.
Okay.
They never pronounce it in any voice acting.
Well, every fan that I know of Final Fantasy pronounces it Cait Sith, so I'm going to assume. And I've never heard anybody correct it. They'll have to say it in Remake, so we'll get an answer either way.
I don't agree with you that everyone says it Cait Sith, or that it's, I've never seen it corrected.
I've never heard anybody say it otherwise, and I've heard many people say that name.
Well, the fact that it comes down to is that it is Ketshi. That's what, outside of Final Fantasy, that's what those words mean.
Well, we're not outside of Final Fantasy, we're inside of Final Fantasy.
Okay, well, inside of Final Fantasy, the katakana clearly says Ketshi.
It's kind of not real. I'm in English, personally. But that actually serves as a great segue, I think, because you've been looking into the localization of this game, and I'm very excited to hear what you have learned.
Yo, this localization was made by, like, one guy in 6 months with no communication with the dev team.
Yeah! Yeah!
There's actually an entire video series that I am in the midst of watching of, it's done by Kotaku's Tim Rogers, where he's just going through the game, side by side, the English version and the Japanese version, and going over every bit of the text and explaining, like, how some things didn't really translate well and how, like, here and there's something that did, but on the whole they didn't. And, like, he says multiple times, it's, like, kind of a miracle that the game's translation is as good as it is. Because this is, like, it was the rushiest rush job that there ever was under the worst possible circumstances. And the fact that it is physically impossible to get all of the dialogue that's being said into an English text box, because you can't make the text any longer than it was in Japanese. And the example that Tim Rogers gives in the video specifically is, you know, the word washing machine? That's about 15 letters in English. In Japanese, it's 3 because of kanji.
So something similar, actually, I learned this recently. Something similar actually kind of happened to Final Fantasy X, where if you listened to my other show, Original Soundtrack, you'd already know this. But just in case you haven't, allow me to give you my new favorite localization factoid I've ever learned in my life. The voice acting in Final Fantasy X is a train wreck. And it's not because the actors are bad. Some things that you'll notice are, like, at a certain point, whenever Yuna has to say yes, she won't just say yes. She'll say yes, Like they sped it up artificially. And it's because whenever they tried to put in a sound file that was longer than the original Japanese sound file, the entire game would crash. And they never fixed it. And so they had to make sure that all of the English dialogue was the same length as the Japanese dialogue. So they had to make sure the word yes was the same length as hi. Or like when Titus really fast says, I hate you. It's because that's one word in Japanese. So it's really funny to me that 4 years later, another Final Fantasy game had roughly the same problem in a different context.
Yep, and there's also the fact that it's like, the guy that was doing the localization, he basically just got a spreadsheet with all the dialogue and was told to figure it out. Like, there's the example of Gongaga, remember the village where you first learned about Zack?
Mm-hmm.
Zack's name is never said anywhere else.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, you remember how they never actually say Zack's name in the flashbacks?
Oh yeah, no. I only know that that's Zack because I am aware of other pieces of Final Fantasy media.
Yeah, and in the Japanese version, it's written in such a way that it's clear that Zack is the guy in the flashback. But in the English version, when you're just looking at the script, and the script is out of order on a spreadsheet, and the different lines from Gongaga may not even necessarily be next to each other, what are you gonna do?
Oh no, that guy got handed a raw deal.
He sure did. It's a thankless job. It's horrifying.
So I think it's worth noting that Earthbound was also localized by one person. But I don't think any of these specific problems... I don't think they handed him a spreadsheet and were like, I don't know, get it done. Bye. You have 6 months.
There's also just like all the famous typos, like this guy are sick, which most of them were fixed in the PC version that the Switch port is based off of.
That also explains like at the very beginning with the attack while its tail is up thing, how it's like split between two windows badly. And therefore, like, in a way, tricked a lot of players into thinking, oh, I gotta attack when his tail's up.
Yeah, it's a mess. I'm really enjoying, I haven't finished these videos yet. I'm really enjoying them, and it's like, wow, there's a lot of nuance that just couldn't carry over. Partially because of just, like, it was physically impossible to fit all that into a text box, and partially because, like, how could the guy doing the job have possibly known?
I find it really funny that this game is called Final Fantasy VII, by the way. To Americans, this might as well have been Final Fantasy IV. And I'm curious to know if anybody's ever said why they just decided to give up on that and give it its real name in America. Because I don't remember, I believe we got Final Fantasy I, and then I think we got Final Fantasy IV, but it was titled Final Fantasy II, and then we got Final Fantasy VI, but it was titled Final Fantasy III in America, and then for some reason they just said, fuck it, it's Final Fantasy VII. This is the seventh game, we've tricked you.
Here's what I want to bet. The Final Fantasy VII logo appears in-game in an FMV, and they probably just looked at that. They just looked at that and went, oh, shit.
Oh, shit. That's probably exactly what it is. They couldn't change the FMVs. Oh, no, I never thought of that. That's really good. That's a good point.
This game's localization was a disaster.
It sounds like it's a miracle this game came out in America at all.
Kind of is. The localization isn't great. And, like, ended up changing some plot details. Like, the whole sequence was like, is Cloud a Sephiroth clone? Or like, was he just lying? Or are they just making all this up to make him feel better? That's a lot clearer in Japanese. The English script forgets to mention that Cloud wasn't just rejected for Soldier outright. He went through the genetic experimentation that Soldier members go through, and he has Genova cells within him, which suddenly things make a lot more sense knowing that.
Yeah, that's That's really, really good. And there's also like the whole, we know now that it was supposed to be Aerith. I believe in the original, it's Aerith in the original localization, right?
Yes.
That's what they called her. But she's, from what I am aware, she is her name is basically supposed to be Earth. Her name is Earth. It's Aerith.
It's Air-Earth.
Air-Earth. Oh, well, there, yeah. Like, that's her name. But the localization called it Aerith and launched the stupidest debate in video games ever.
Well, yeah.
Because there are still people that will defend to the, despite her being named in other games that didn't have these localization problems.
She's named Aerith in literally everything but the original localization. Literally everything.
And there are still people who will die on the hill that her name is Aerith. It's so dumb.
Here's a fun fact. In Japanese, the character limit for the character names is shorter. It's six letters, I think, instead of the nine letters that we have. So Red 13's name doesn't fit. So they created a Roman numeral 13 letter just for Red 13's name.
So it's like in Pokemon where there's a PKMN that's just on the keyboard, even though you would never use it. And specifically, you can tell because it's when they... Oh, I think it's like when you battle like...
Pokemon Trainer.
Yeah, Pokemon Trainer. They couldn't fit that entire thing in the text box, so it's small PKMN Trainer. So it's something like that then. That's really interesting.
There's a lot that didn't carry over properly. And there's a lot of character nuance that's lost in the localization. There are plot details that are more confusing. There's some entire lines of dialogue that just don't make sense. Including a part do you remember when you're first like starting to get all of the parts for Cloud's dress?
Yes.
And, like, you're going into that one area, and Cloud says, ah, so that's how we'll trick them. And then Aerith says, oh, so that's how you'll trick them.
Yes, I think so.
You know how that doesn't make any sense?
Yeah.
That's because in Japanese, Cloud said, I think I know what we're going to do. And then Aerith says, ah, so that's how you'll trick them.
Okay.
And what probably happened is just that, like, the translator just kind of lost focus because he had been awake for 100 straight hours and just accidentally copy pasted the same line.
Beautiful. It's these stories are always fucking fascinating because like you look at the state of localization today and like sometimes we get some not great localizations, but for the most part, like most of these big publishers have it like on lock. Like localization now is a really weirdly well-oiled machine, but then you look back in the 90s and it's like, I mean, there was one dude in a cubicle and he had to translate all the Final Fantasy VII by himself. That would never happen today. That's bizarre.
So the entire translation was handled by one Michael Basket.
I salute you, sir.
He's frankly a hero.
I salute him. Super, super good. What's the name of this video series so people can look it up, so I can look it up even?
It's called Let's Mosey.
Alrighty. Isn't that what he says in North Cave? And everybody's like, hey, can't you say, like, something cool, though?
Yes.
Can't you just say move out like a person?
Yes. Let's Mosey, a slow translation of Final Fantasy VII. Because he spends the entire... The first 10-minute video is spent entirely on the first three lines of dialogue in the game.
Beautiful. So, let's talk about the final boss. I want to talk about the final boss.
Okay.
Both forms of it. Both Bizarro Sephiroth, which...
Oh, I think we're about to mention another localization thing, but continue.
And Safer Sephiroth, which... Please, please tell me about that, because I assume that's what you're talking about.
So, there is a thing in... mythology, in the Kabbalah, I believe it is, which, you know, obviously the name Sephiroth comes from the Sephiroth tree. There is something called Sefer Sephiroth.
Oh no!
This is an actual piece of mythology.
Oh no!
And I think Mr. Basket, when he was translating, saw Sephir Sephiroth and just said, okay, Safer Sephiroth, that works. Because the game was shipping tomorrow.
This is one of the most famous final bosses of all time. Oh, that's so good.
That's so good. But I wanna make my main focus first on Bizarro Sephiroth, because, hey, that fight sucks.
It's confusing. I don't know the rules.
It's not just that it's confusing. It's also that it's so slow. It takes so long to do anything. I would kill something, and then it would play the sound of dying, and then it would just sit there for a full 15 seconds, and then tell me that it died, and then it would do an action, which would take this really... And this was on 3x speed, might I add.
Now, I looked at your VOD. I don't know why. Like, it took forever for me, too, but, like, it took longer for you.
Yeah, I don't get it, and it was just like, all right, this fight needs to end now.
I just looked at the Final Fantasy Wiki page for Bizarro Sephiroth, and they just have, like, the source code for how his AI works just sitting here.
Perfect.
That's odd.
Also,
in Japanese, its name is Rebirth Sephiroth.
That sounds a little more easy to take seriously.
I don't know how to get from point A to point B on that one.
I also am not sure how Rebirth Sephiroth turned into Superman villain Sephiroth, but all right. But, like, just the whole thing with the... He's got multiple parts that you have to kill, and his head kept coming back to life, and bringing in... I think it's cool that you can bring in three other party members, but both of us had a thing where it's like, I didn't train up three other party members. Because that's not how JRPGs work.
I just checked, by the way. Sefer is Hebrew for book. Mm. The phrase Sefer Sephiroth in Hebrew, which I probably don't know how to pronounce even a little, would translate to the Book of Numerations, which, of course, is the 10 Kabbalistic Sephirot. It could also be interpreted as the final boss being the Book of Sephiroth, which sounds pretty fucking cool.
I guess. Yeah. I could see that.
Anything's better than Safer Sephiroth.
Like, I don't know. Bizarro Sephiroth sucks. That was a really, really bad final boss. Like, the first phase of the final boss, I mean.
It for sure could have been better. I think the two parties thing is cool, but I don't actually understand how to fight Bizarro Sephiroth. Just straight up.
You know what would have made the two parties thing a lot cooler?
What?
I know why it's not like this in 7. I get it. It's technological limitations, I assume. But in Final Fantasy X, which, by the way, fascinating experience to play 10 and 7 at the same time. Like, absolutely fascinating, because I was able to look at, like, all right, within this 4-year span of time, like, what did they improve? What did they get worse at somehow? Like, what did they get better at? What stayed roughly the same? And it was just really, really interesting. And in Final Fantasy X, I've mentioned this on one of the episodes before, you can switch party members out at any time and it doesn't waste a turn. And so it's really easy to basically keep your entire party at roughly the same level. And so in a game like that, where you're encouraged to be switching party members all the time, I think the second party would work a lot better. But in a game like this, you're kind of, whether they mean to or not, you're kind of encouraged to, like, pick three people, and that's your party. You stick with them. And so it's very likely you're going to get to Bizarro Sephiroth, and, like, yeah, your party members, they level up, like, off to the side, but not nearly as fast as the ones that are in your party, and they also don't get limit level ups. And they also don't get, you know, like, they likely don't have any materia equipped, because why would you use your materia on characters you're not using? And so the game suddenly, like, pick three other people to fight with you.
I think I saw someone say that if your average party level is low enough, then it won't even give you the option for two parties.
Oh, so it's just like, you're going to die anyway. Who cares?
Yes.
Interesting.
Also, you can have three parties.
You can have, wait, what?
Yeah.
That's even weirder.
So the conditions for that are you have to have both Yuffie and Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have defeated Genova Synthesis before the Ultima Countdown finished. The lowest level character needs to be at least level 45. And the average party level, not counting Aerith, because, you know.
Dead.
It needs to be 68.
Huh. So I was kind of close to that, except I don't think I beat Genova before the Ultima Countdown. Interesting.
Is your average party level 68?
It was 65.
No. Your mathematical average needs to be 68.
I have no idea. So basically, that's for people who went out and beat the weapons.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, that's a pretty interesting reward for grinding enough to go beat the weapons, because, I mean...
You get the most difficult version of that boss.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's Bizarro Sephiroth. So, alright. Safer Sephiroth. Because, hey, if that's what the localization calls him, that's what his name is now. Until the remake tells me differently, which, God willing, it will after the heat death of the universe.
You've already said Aerith.
Well, yeah, that's been in other games. Safer Sephiroth hasn't been.
It has, actually. I just don't think it's ever, like, been localized.
Because I've always known it as Safer Sephiroth.
It's in Theatrhythm.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure it's called Safer Sephiroth in Theatrhythm.
I know, I hate it.
I assume Remake will probably mess with that a bit.
I don't think it will.
I don't know. It's going to be weird. It's going to be really interesting to see, like, how many of these things Remake messes with.
I really hope that Remake is not afraid to kill the sacred cow. My greatest fear is that Remake is going to keep things just for the sake of it was like that before.
So I think in Safer Sephiroth's case, that might be the case. Because I think you're right. I think they might keep it only because like that's become, for better or for worse, has become like an iconic part of this game. But like Bizarro Sephiroth, I bet you money that gets changed.
I feel like if they're going to change either of them, they would change Safer Sephiroth.
Really?
Because Bizarro Sephiroth is less stupid.
I mean, I agree, but Safer Sephiroth's the one that became, like, well-known around Final Fantasy fans. Because he's the final boss. I don't know, we'll have to see in 30 years when the final part of Final Fantasy VII Remake comes out, and we've all died from the ice caps melting.
Just please, Square Enix, don't be afraid to kill that sacred cow.
They will be. Safer Sephiroth. I killed him too fast because I was cheating, and actually looking back at it, I kind of regret that a little bit. I'm glad I got through it. I honestly don't think I would have had to, all things considered.
Honestly, the limit spam trivializes it because you do so much damage.
Yeah, and I kind of regret using the limit spam. I think if I did it again, I would probably just fight him like normal. Until it looked like, oh, I'm definitely not winning this fight. Well, time to kill God. And that's basically how that would go. But that means that I missed a very important thing that you have told me not to watch until we were recording live.
Yes, I would like you to watch Supernova right now live. Because he hit me with Supernova twice.
I killed him too quick for him to use Supernova. First observation, this video is 2 minutes long.
Let me know when you hit play.
So I already have. I've been going for 20 seconds. There are mathematical equations. All right. There's a meteor. Here it comes. It's coming into the Milky Way, I guess. Or a spiral galaxy. I guess I can't say it's the Milky Way for sure. There's Pluto. There goes Pluto. There's Saturn. There goes Saturn. No, there goes the rings around Saturn, I guess. I don't know. Hi, Jupiter. Goodbye, Jupiter. Now you're a donut.
It's a gas giant.
That's true. There's nothing solid there for it to hit. Is it the sun? Did it go into the sun? Does this attack him blowing up the sun?
It's called supernova.
I mean, yeah, I guess, but it skipped a few planets. There goes Mercury. All right, we're getting back to it. Venus, like it deserves. Turning into that meme that spread when Infinity War came out. So I don't see how he could use this attack twice. This seems like a one and done sort of thing. Because the planet's gone now. The planet that you are actively standing on. How is this going to look in remake? What the hell? How much damage did that do? A lot.
So it does a fixed amount of damage of 90% of your remaining health.
Jesus.
Would you like to see the Japanese version?
It's different?
It is.
Okay. And then you know what? While we're doing this, I think we should look up and watch one thing that we didn't get to see.
What's that?
Well, I'll mention after I've watched this video that is a good deal shorter. What the hell? It's 27 seconds long! Why would we get the longer version?
Because it's better.
Why did we make a new FMV? So I'm going to need us to look up Knights of the Round.
Oh, I've seen it. It's actually kind of boring.
Ah, well, we didn't get Knights of the Round, everybody. Because, fuck that. That is built through chocobo breeding and racing, and I don't want to do that. It's not fun. So no.
So here's the thing about Supernova. They have to have the 2-minute version in remake, right?
They better.
But they won't, because it's not in the Japanese version.
Well, it's also not a turn-based game anymore, so it would kind of suck if it was like, oh, I guess I'll put my controller down for 2 minutes.
Hold up, Sephiroth appears in World of Final Fantasy, and he uses Supernova, and it has the mathematical equations.
Yeah!
They
all
don't
right.
go through the whole 2-minute thing, but English Supernova is canon, baby.
Perfect. Beautiful.
They've got to do the entire thing, right?
They better. We'll know again in 40 years when Final Fantasy VII Remake Final Part comes out.
Here's Knights of the Round if you want to watch it. It's kind of boring.
I think that, well, I just want to see how long it is. How long is this animation? That's a minute and a half long. Jesus Christ. All right. So I am working on a video for Nintendo World Report right now, and my roommate Ben, who was on the Super Mario World episode, he recorded a piece of footage of Final Fantasy IX for me, and during that footage, he performed a summon, and I was like, I only need 5 seconds of footage, man. If you're doing a summon, we're not even going to get, like, half the summon. And he was like, oh, no. And then he did it, and it was over within, like, the time it took me to say that sentence.
Sick.
They learned somehow. So, yeah, that's Final Fantasy VII. What did you think of? So I already knew that Cloud used Omni Slash during that final sequence, which is the main reason why I was not worried about getting Omni Slash at all, because I knew we were going to see it anyways. What do you think of that part? I think that part's kind of cool.
It's pretty all right. I don't understand how it makes sense in the canon of it's not Sephiroth, it's Genova.
Because in Cloud's brain, getting rid of Sephiroth.
But Sephiroth's not in Cloud's brain.
He did the Omni Slash many, many times. I think that part is mainly catharsis, and also because I feel like they knew that, because you get Omni Slash there regardless of what your limit level was. Get to do Omni Slash no matter what. And I think that might have been Square saying, man, we made this really cool move and barely anybody's going to see it because it's tied to this stupid battle square. What if we had a little thing at the end where you get to do it no matter what? And I appreciate that. Also, Sephiroth is shirtless, and that would explain why so many people want... that doesn't explain anything. I already knew why that was, because he's hot. That's why. It's just because he's hot. That's it.
I like the ending a lot. I like how there's just kind of that melancholic, you know, we did everything we can, and now we just
wait. We don't know if it'll work.
Yeah, and I like the whole, like, so Majora's Mask ripped that sequence off super hard, huh?
Yeah, but Majora's Mask used that theme way better.
A little bit, yeah.
That's why I kind of don't mind that Majora's Mask just ripped it off, because they did it a lot better.
But also, I do like the whole thing where at first they're like, oh, shit, it didn't work. We are too late. And then the tentacles of the life stream come out of the ground and save us all. I do like that it reminds me that Marlene exists for a brief second. I don't know where she was supposed to be.
Hiding.
Because she wasn't in Midgar. And we've been led the entire game to believe that she was supposed to be in Midgar. And then after the credits with the whole, like, Red 13 and his children running through the canyon and, like, running up, like, 500 years later to a completely overgrown Midgar. There's something really melancholy about that. And honestly, really good. I really like that imagery a lot.
It's also kind of, like, ambiguous as to how much Holy really worked. Because they did say that, like, Holy, the way that it would work was it would remove the threats to the planet. And are humans threats?
Well, we already canonically know.
I don't care about Advent Children.
No, it's canon. You have to.
I ain't never read none of those Final Fantasy books, and I ain't about to start.
Advent Children is canon. You can't ignore it.
Okay, but Advent Children didn't exist when this game came out, and they weren't planning on it. So it's an ending that has, like, this emotional tone of it's kind of up to you whether Holy worked or not. And I like that. That's a good tone to leave it on that fits with the we don't know if this is going to work feeling.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because at the end of the day, the planet was protected.
Mm-hmm.
The planet was saved, which was a major theme of the quest.
To end this all off, I want to do two things. First of all, you thought I forgot, you listener. I didn't forget. Hey, yo, One Winged Angel is great. I like that song a lot. I think it gets a lot better with orchestration, which we have gotten out the wazoo since this game came out. But, like, One Winged Angel is great. Really don't think there's anything else to say about it. It was like one of the first. Is it our first experience with a song that has vocals in it? I can't think of another one.
I mean, Smiles and Tears, technically.
Technically, but I'm not going to count that. This is like actual vote. Like, those weren't MIDIs. That is a real choir.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure. Maybe. I think this is the first one.
I'm pretty sure. And so that's one of the big reasons why this song was so, like, Uematsu thinks, like, yeah, no, I think One Winged Angel is good, but I don't get why that's the one that became super, super popular. He likes Dancing Mad a little bit better, I guess, which is the final boss theme from 6, which is another very famous Final Fantasy final boss theme. But I think it's in 1997, starting that fight, and then suddenly, like, real-ass vocals come in. It's just like, holy shit, this is the future of video games!
Mm-hmm.
Because that just didn't happen very often up to this point. And the PS2 got a bunch of, like, the PlayStation 1 got some. I believe there's a vocal piece to end Symphony of the Night. That's the main one that comes to mind. And then, obviously, the PS2 would bring in a lot more vocals even after that. But yeah, this was new. This was revolutionary. It was awesome. And I still think this song, like, holds up today. And I cannot wait to hear this song in remake. in 70 years.
It's pretty good. And if you're wondering what the lyrics say, the answer is not a lot.
Because they're actual words, aren't they? It's just...
Yes, it's actual Latin chanting. And it just translates to you, burning inside with violent anger, burning inside with violent anger, burning, burning, Sephiroth.
Sure does.
A monstrous fate and insignificance, a monstrous fate and insignificance, burning inside with violent anger, Sephiroth.
But yeah, I like that song. I like that song a lot. And that's like the song from this game. And I'm still kind of angry that it's not in Smash. Like, to this day, still very upset.
We know whose fault that is.
Yeah, Square, Nintendo, whoever licensed it for some fucking commercial somewhere. Well, I think to actually end it off, I do want to, I asked on Twitter what people, like, how they feel about Final Fantasy VII, and if they have anything they wanted to say about it. So to wrap it off real quick.
You asked like today.
I asked like today because I didn't know. It wasn't clear whether or not we were going to record tonight or not. And I didn't have the idea until today. I'll try to be a little bit more proactive with that. But we'll... Because this is something I think I'd like to do for... Probably not for the next game. Because who the fuck's going to have nostalgic memories about Game & Watch Gallery? But I don't know. I did get two responses. One being from DVD Smith. Who is a friend of the show and a real nice guy, been with us since the beginning. He said that he played it for the first time this year on Switch, just like us, and then the following Friday just ended up at the Distant Worlds concert, where they were playing a full hour of live orchestral Final Fantasy VII music.
Sick.
And he says he didn't even plan on going to that concert. That was not planned. It's just he mentioned it to some friends of his that he had finished his first Final Fantasy game, because like us, this was his first one. And they were like, oh, you should come to this concert with us. And he did. And so I want to see that concert really badly. Ah, that concert sounds great. And then our friend DQP also responded, saying that it had been a game that had been on his bucket list for a while, since like high school, according to him. And he just really found it interesting how it was a narrative, as he puts it, a long narrative of environmentalism. And he also mentions that final little view of the game of the overgrown Midgar 500 years later, and how it sort of struck a chord with him and was very powerful. And so, yeah. Thank you for those responses. Again, I will try to be a little bit more proactive than the day of to get these questions answered. And with that, I don't really have anything else to say about Final Fantasy VII.
We did it.
We did it. We don't have another JRPG for 25 more games. 26 more games, actually, because while I'm not... I don't know where, but King of Fighters will show up in there at some point as well. And we also did it before the end of the year. So we're entering 2020, going from our longest game yet to one of our shortest games yet.
Maybe the shortest game, depending on how you want to count Duck Hunt, which technically doesn't have an ending.
I mean, technically neither does this game.
That's true.
I think they're going to be of comparable length if I had to make a prediction. But our next game is representing fighter number 26. It is the 1997 Game Boy game, Game & Watch Gallery. So yeah, we're going from giant JRPG to collection of Game & Watch games. And that'll never not be funny to me.
I regret suggesting this one. Two is better.
Yeah, this was your idea.
Yeah, and then I recanted it, and you insisted we still do it.
I made you stick to your guns, whether you liked it or not.
I want you, when you hate this, I want you to acknowledge that you did this.
I'll only have to play it for an hour. I don't care. This is gonna be a weird departure, and also, we won't be playing this probably until, like, the second week in January, because we're done for the year.
When do you get back from your vacation?
I get back on the 7th. of January.
I see.
So we're, but we also kind of decided like we're going to finish Final Fantasy VII, and then let's just chill for the rest of December.
I mean, again, you're about to go on vacation. It's not like we can do anything else.
Well, yeah, we're about to go on vacation, or I'm about to go on vacation. You don't get to come. As much as I've tried.
No, you haven't.
In my heart, I have. And so it just made sense to sort of say, like, all right, we did it. We're just going to chill.
So anyway, Game & Watch Gallery.
Game & Watch Gallery. It's going to have game. It's going to have games and a watch. I wonder if they kept the watch. I doubt they kept the watch. I don't know. That's my most interest. That's the most interest I have in it. I don't know how to talk about this game.
Game & Watch is two verbs.
I mean, yes, but I thought it was also a watch.
No.
Doesn't it tell the time?
It has an alarm.
Have I misunderstood what the watch in Game & Watch means all this time?
I have understood it to be two verbs.
I understood it to be it's a game, like a gaming handheld, and then it also has a time-telling thing built in.
Who cares? It kind of sucks.
I mean, yeah, it was basically a glorified calculator. It was a calculator that couldn't do math, could only run octopus.
Flag man.
Sausages.
Judge.
Judge.
Ball.
Game & Watch was stupid, and I can't wait.
Game & Watch Gallery 2 legit has a better collection.
I'm sure it does. I believe you. Anyways.
Why are you so committed to making worse content and having less fun?
Well, I have a myriad of reasons, but we don't have time to get into them on the show. I don't have anything else to say about Game & Watch Gallery. It's going to be a collection of minigames. It's going to be a very chill start to the year. And then we're going to jump back into more of the real shit. Which, some of these games, I've played all of the games coming up after Game & Watch Gallery. Even the one right after it, even though I've only played about maybe 10 minutes of it. I'm really looking forward to this next stretch of games. I think they're going to be a lot of fun. I think 2020 is going to be a very fun year for Smashterpieces because we won't get stuck in JRPG hell. If you did a bunch of like math and estimations that I think will probably end up being relatively right, and if those do come to pass, like we're not hitting another JRPG for the entirety of 2020.
Sick.
And you know what? That sounds real nice to me. I need a break.
The longest game that we've got coming up is going to be Ocarina of Time, which is going to take a while, but also isn't a JRPG.
Yeah.
It isn't a JRPG immediately followed by a JRPG.
There were two games right in between these two.
It's a JRPG immediately followed by Donkey Kong 64.
And I'm excited for that. Oh, yeah. Donkey Kong 64 is after that. Hell yes. I'm super excited for that. And between those two is probably another one of those one of the shortest fucking games on the list things.
This has been a good talk about Game & Watch Gallery.
Man, I don't have anything to say about Game & Watch Gallery. I'll have more to say about other games. Hey, everybody. I hope you have a happy new year and a happy holidays. And thank you so much for sticking around with us in our the year of Earthbound and Final Fantasy VII, and I guess Mario showed up too. But yeah, it's been a long year full of long games, and I think overall it was a success. I was honestly very worried about Earthbound and Final Fantasy, like, causing us to burn out, just in general. And I'm glad it didn't. And, yeah. Hey, you listener. Thanks for listening. For the whole year. You can find us on Twitter at SmashYourPieces. Same with on Facebook and on YouTube. You can find us at NintendoWorldReport.com or on our website at AnonDino.Squarespace.com. Hey, yo, we're on Spotify now. So that's cool.
Easier than ever to hear my hot takes on Earthbound.
Yeah, and also, like, Spotify lets us give all of the episodes unique album art, which other podcatchers don't let us do, so that's super rad. You can find me on Twitter at The Debugger. You can find Matt at Grimace Do Menace. You can find us on Twitch. I am at Detective Dobaga. Matt is at Grimace the Menace. We also both stream on Nintendo World Report, twitch.tv/Nintendo World Report. In fact, I will be taking the next, like, I want to say 3, 4, 5 games somewhere in there. Cause you, I don't know, have been on the channel for about 5 months doing Final Fantasy, so I think it's only fair that I take
and
the next few
Earthbound.
Games. And you were on Earthbound. So I think it's only fair that
I took 1 week off for you to do Mario.
Hey, I guess you did Donkey Kong too. Holy shit, I forgot about that. So yeah, it's the next two games are going to be me.
You've done 1 week on the channel since we started doing it on the Nintendo World Report Twitch channel.
And why would we stop a good thing? Come on, let's get you on that Game & Watch gallery. Thursdays at time. So yeah, I'll be there pretty much up to Ocarina of Time because I'll be playing 3D. I don't have capability to stream that yet. But that might change between now and then, so that's not set in stone. We'll see. We'll have to figure that out. Thank you, Peter, for editing. It's pretty cool.
It's not Thanksgiving, it's Christmas.
Yeah, it's Christmas. And thank you, Peter, for giving me the Christmas gift of not dying. I appreciate it. With that, my name is Joe.
And my name is Matt.
And we will see you next time in the new year with our episode on Game & Watch Gallery.